Hey there, everyone. Welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the podcast where we focus on buy and hold real estate in order to build legacy wealth for you and your family. So we only talk about owning rental real estate. We don't talk about all that other craziness, right?
Like rental cars.
We don't do bumper cars.
Or rental tuxedos. We don't do that.
Do you want to get like an RV? Like and do one of those like cross-country trips?
like Anna. Mm-hmm. I've been following his old co-anchor, Anna Koyman, on Instagram, and they're driving cross-country. But no thanks.
No, we only focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income and creating legacy wealth for your family.
Tuxedos are a good business. I actually think that's been disrupted like by some kind of online company now.
Like Warby Parker, like with
something
his eyeglasses.
That. Like there's a new type of way to rent a tuxedo. You don't go to the mall anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
I wish I would have known that for prom.
It's like Rent the Runway for men. There's a new site. I can't remember the name of it, but...
Yeah, so we don't talk about rental tuxedos. Actually, we should look into that.
We should see if that's a good business model.
No.
What are you doing with your life, Clayton? I'm renting tuxedos to dudes who have to go to the prom and weddings that they don't want to be in.
I'm going to need to do a whole episode on how not to go focus on shiny object syndrome, because if you start talking to me about this stuff, you know I'll get roped into it.
Clayton, I'll start Googling as soon as this podcast is over. Like, what is this that men have to... Because Clayton hates to be measured for, you know, suits and that kind of thing if he has to be a groomsman. So yeah, you don't have to do that anymore.
Apparently. Can I just get some props real quick before we dive into today's episode? Today, and by the way, today we're going to be talking about what to expect during a tenant turnover. So what sorts of expenses, what does that process look like when a tenant leaves your property and you have to get another tenant in the property? But can I just get some props here for a second? Because I have a tendency to go after like shiny objects, but I have been over the past few years just laser focused on real estate and buy and hold real estate. And that's how we've been able to like pay for our kids' schooling. Like, I think with me not going off the rails, that's probably helped us significantly.
Yeah. You know, I've always been like, I've never wanted to shut down your ideas, but I will say I've realized how much cheaper it is when you don't have so many ideas that you're trying to implement. Because Clayton will be like, oh, I have this great new idea for a business. And I spent $1,500 on a designer. And I also bought the URL. And I also, like, he really, like, yeah, it's good. It's good. You get props for that.
Yeah.
Also, like I said, I'm glad not to spend the money.
Yeah. All right. She's just glad to make the money with real estate investing. Okay. So today we're going to talk about what to expect during a tenant turnover. So you want to set this up for us?
Okay. So what we want to talk about is what happens when your tenants inevitably leave and you have to find new tenants. And usually you'll get an email from your property manager, unless you're doing it yourself, which we've talked many times about how we don't recommend that. And you know, I can say from experience that when we get that email, there's always just a little bit of fear where you're like, oh no, my rental income is going to be disrupted. And now there's going to be all of these expenses that I'm going to have to shell out cash for because you'll have to pay to upgrade the place or fix it up, however your renters left it.
Right. So that's that little twinge that you always sort of feel when you get that email. Oh, 123 Main Street is no longer rented. Shoot. Okay. Well, you know, when we first were doing this, I think we had a different kind of reaction. It was more sort of, I don't know, I'll say a panic.
Yeah. Oh, like I said, I still feel a little like, uh-oh. But then we've talked about this many times. We account for taxes and vacancy and repairs in our budgeting for what we expect to make for the year for each property. So usually we have accounted for some amount of vacancy that's acceptable.
Very conservatively, by the way. Right. Our like the vacancy rate that we figure in our ROI formula, by the way, we have a whole episode, if you go back in the archives, on how to figure out ROI or return on investment. We're not going to do that here because we have a whole episode devoted to it. But you know, we figure that into our ROI formula. We take out 40%. For vacancy repairs and expenses, we build that into our numbers. So if you have a tenant turnover that only lasts 3 weeks, which is usually what most of ours do, 3, maybe 4 weeks at most, you know, you're still very, a number of months ahead of the curve. Because if we're figuring like 3 months of vacancies and you only have four weeks, then you're still ahead of the game.
Right. And so, you know, one of the big questions that always comes up when I see this email is, okay, how did the last tenant leave the house? And that's where it comes in for you to have a good relationship with your property manager. And they should send you some kind of list of what needs to be done to the house in order to get it ready for the new tenant.
Right. So let's dive into, we had a tenant on our, this property happened to be in, we actually just had a tenant turnover. That's why we wanted to talk about this on a property in Michigan. This has been a great property for us. In fact, this tenant has been living there for 5 years. 5 years. So we had one lease that lasted 5 years on this property. And so look, this person lived in this house for 5 years. Natalie and I just moved from a house that we lived out in a certain section of New Jersey. And we lived in it for 3 years,
yeah,
right?
It was only 3 years.
So our tenant lived in our rental property for longer than we just lived in our last house that we bought, owned, and raised two kids in. So things are going to happen to the house, right? You're going to hang up pictures on the wall. There's going to be holes in the drywall. There may be a window that maybe the screen doesn't work as effectively because you've been opening and closing it all summer. Who knows, right? There are going to be, it's a lived in house.
Right. I think I've said this a few times though on this podcast that my first rental property was in San Francisco, which was a bit of a nightmare. And these a-holes left my house. It was just a small condo, but they put anchors in the walls, like actually, you know, huge holes. And usually if it's something like a small drywall patch, I don't mind because I want people to live in these houses and feel like it's their own. But, you know, there comes a time where it's like, these were huge holes that these people...
Now, you managed... So, this is, we talked about this on past episodes. This was an A-class property. Mm-hmm. She managed it herself. So, not only does she buy
from,
in the...
From New York City. It was in San Francisco proper, and I was living in New York City.
So, a couple of things she did wrong. She bought in an A-class neighborhood, which is a big no-no, with A-class tenants.
Well, I bought for myself, though. I did live there. I hadn't intended to keep it as a rental. But when I started keeping it as a rental, I should have gotten a property manager as soon as possible, and I did not.
Right. So dealing with drywall is not a big issue. Okay. So you should get an email typically or a letter, you know, or a phone call from your property manager to kind of go over what repairs need to be done on the property. Now, typically they'll ask you, hey, do you want to continue renting this property? Or do you have some other plan for it? Like, do you want to move in yourself? Or
do you want to sell it?
Right. Or do you want to sell it or whatever? They don't want to just rent it without asking you, of course.
And I think we've said several times on this podcast that we really want our renters to feel at home in the property and not like they're living in a rental. So things like, you know, the screen maybe doesn't work while they're going in and out. That's fine. You know, we can fix a screen. They put up some pictures. Okay, they're trying to make it their own. You know, we don't love it if they want to paint everything purple. But within reason, we really try and let them make decisions about the place that they're living. They want to change the plants out front. You know, again, within reason, we usually try really, really hard to say yes when the property managers write to us and say, hey, they want to do this. Is that okay? And a lot of times the property manager will say, hey, the tenant wants to do this. I don't suggest it. Shall I tell them no? And a lot of times we'll come back and say, no, let him because, or her, because like we said, we really want them to feel at home there.
So certain states have different statutes and laws on what the property manager needs to notify the previous tenant of for the return of the security deposit. Okay, so that's step one, right? Like what happens to your security deposit? Well, for instance, like in one of our rental states, Michigan, they have a statute that gives 30 days for the ex-resident to receive the move-out report, or they're faced with double security return with limited charges for damages. So they usually try to get this move-out report done within like 20 days. And then they need our feedback as the owner within 15 days. So they send it to the tenant. They have their own options to, you know, fix these items or whatever. And then they have to then mail it to us as well.
And some property managers will keep those security deposits for you. You may or may not know this, but I learned this in real estate school. A property manager is by law supposed to have a real estate license because they are dealing in real estate. If your property manager is not licensed in real estate in the state that they're working in, they're technically not supposed to be managing your property for you. So a property manager will know this. And I like to have the property manager keep the security deposit for me so that I don't budget for that, just because I don't like to keep an extra account. You're not supposed to keep it in an interest-bearing account anyway, so it's not like we would have been making money off of it. So it's better for me and sort of my accounting if when they move out, the property manager returns the deposit that they've been keeping. I like it that way. We had one recently move out where I had the property manager just didn't do that. And they said, send this back.
And that was in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. And I didn't get that email. It came from this person's assistant, which an email I didn't recognize. And then they're like, hey, the tenant's asking for their deposit back. And I'm like, well, then give it to them. And they're like, you have it. And, you know, it was just a little confusing. So it's my preference that the property manager keeps it. But if you think that you'll be okay with that accounting, then you can.
Right. Just another layer of complexity if you try to manage and deal with the stuff yourself. That's why we love property managers. Good ones, by the way. So I'm going to give you a breakdown of a property report that was sent to us this week for a property after the tenant lived there for 5 years. Now, I'm going to read off a list of, there are 25 items. I'm going to paraphrase and kind of cut to the chase.
Are you really going to? No. I don't want to sit here while you read that.
No.
But I'm going to go to the bathroom. See ya.
Yeah. Go get a beer. So now I'm going to read. These are the items that they, when they did the walkthrough, I'm going to just go through a few of them here.
And I'm just going to give you an idea of the typical stuff that you would expect to see.
Okay. Number one, entranceway to the property. There are 3 stops to the walk up to gain access to the property. There's a railing to the right and the railing to the left that are missing. They need to install a railing to the left. See photo attached. Number two, several items were left at the curb. Not sure if the garbage man will take it away or not. We may have to get a second man and a trailer to remove some additional garbage.
Number three, dead cat in the wall.
What? No.
I'm just kidding. See, paying attention.
I can read. Number three, vertical blinds in the living room are non-functioning. Number four, clean all windows, tracks, and screens. Number five, clean all vents, cold air returns. I suggest replacing all vents due to being so dirty. See attached photos. Clean all windows, tracks, screens, etc. And the list goes on. Right? Garage door is functioning. However, at the base of the garage door, it's filled with dirt and grass cuttings that needs to be cleaned. So look, these things, I mean, we just moved from our house where we lived in it, mm-hmm. you know, our primary residence, and the amount of things that we had to patch and fix. Remember, I was there so late into the night, while you got the kids to the hotel while we were moving into our new place. And I was there with rubber gloves on, like patching walls, like cleaning out like the under the sink. On and on and on the list went.
Right. And we're not Neanderthals. We lived pretty cleanly. So, you know, you live in a house, you have a family there, especially if you have small kids, it's going to get, you know, it's going to need some TLC. But this long list of things that they need to do was actually really affordable, and we didn't have to come out of pocket for it, right?
Right. So the list went on to 25 things, everything from clean refrigerator, clean stovetop, clean bathroom, kitchen sinks, etc. The total came out, the labor was $1,000, and the repairs came out to like $270. So total cost for all of this tenant turnover was $1,270. Now, that's going to come right out of the security deposit. You know, that security deposit that they've then added into their rent for the 5 years, we're not going to have to come out of the pocket for this at all.
Well, not all of it. And state by state, it's different. Like there are certain things, like I said, I had this big argument with these tenants in San Francisco, and they had to replace the carpet because their dog pissed all over it. But wall repair was not covered in, you know, like either the contract or the state laws. So not everything you can withhold from the security deposit deposit. But even so, you know, like I said, that was pretty affordable. And we want this house to be beautiful. We want to put the investment for the next people. So that wasn't that big of a deal. Now, sometimes you're going to get like this appliance doesn't work. And that can be stressful. I know I've had to replace refrigerators and stovetops and ranges and things like that. And, you know, have you ever heard the saying renter's fix?
No.
Like, oh, just do a renter's fix on it means you fix it up in a way that you wouldn't for yourself.
Hmm. And see, we don't do that.
No, don't do that. Yeah.
We never do that. Like, you know, I put in brand new appliances on this property, but see the beauty of where like with our company, with Morris Invest, like we don't, you know, tenants are responsible for their own appliances. So they'll bring their own appliances. They're responsible, you know, stoves, refrigerators, all of that. So it's
not bring a stove.
Yeah.
Like a range in the counter.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They bring their own stoves.
Well, they don't bring it. They buy it.
And they take it with them when they leave?
Sure.
You would think I would know this, but I did not know this.
Yeah. This is the CFO of my company, and she doesn't realize that our tenants are responsible for their own appliances.
Well, I knew the refrigerator, but, yeah, you know.
Hello.
McFly.
Yeah, I mean, come on. No, but so these first few properties that we, you know, bought in Michigan, you know, we've talked about on the podcast, I probably overpaid for them, probably over upgraded. I put in all new appliances in the property. But at the end of the day, you know, even with those repairs and those cleanings and all of that, you know, if our monthly rent is $850 or so, I think it's $850 a month on this property. And the whole tenant turnover is like $1,270. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's totally acceptable. Even though, like I said, it feels much worse to get a bill than a check from your rental property every month. But at the same time, you know, you do the best you can. You do the opposite of a renter's fix, and you know that you're going to have checks coming in again soon.
Yeah, don't cheap out on this property or your properties because it will come back to haunt you. You know, it's like buying IKEA furniture. When you could buy an actual nice piece of furniture, it's going to, you know, the IKEA furniture is going to break in a few years. Just buy the nice piece of furniture that'll last a very, very long time.
Right. Plus particle board. You can inhale that. It's toxic. It's bad for you.
Don't even get me started. This woman is crazy when it comes to like toxins and all that kind of craziness. Just be thankful.
That you don't live with me?
I'm not saying that. I guess it's probably time to wrap up the podcast on that note.
I guess, so you can splain yourself.
Yeah, I better have some splaining to do. So that is what to expect on a tenant turnover. Would you say that that's a pretty average tenant? We've actually had, I mean, tenant turnovers that are, this one seemed extensive, 25 list items, you know, but we've had.
All so tiny that I was like, yeah, do that. Fine. I almost felt like bothered to be reading about like, so you're going to wipe down the bottom of the garage. Like, don't email me about it. Just do it.
Right. You're going to clean the stove. I would expect that the stove would be clean, but you know, hey, this is a thorough property management company. They want to make sure we know what's being done, and that's why they're great.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's a pretty typical tenant turnover, right?
I would say it's typical, right?
Yeah. So even with these types of fixes, like, come on, it's such a piddly little thing. We expect people to clean the stovetop, et cetera. This is pretty typical for a tenant turnover. We've had way less, like $500 tenant turnovers, $700 tenant turnovers, $200 tenant turnovers. But at the end of the day, this is very, very typical. And you're budgeting for this anyway. Like, this is a typical budgeting item if you're figuring 40% for vacancy repairs and expenses.
And two things you should ask your property manager is, one, will they front these costs and then take the cost out of the rent when that property does start cash flowing? That's pretty typical way to do that and highly preferable, clearly, because then you don't have to come out of pocket for these types of things. You just sort of let the rent make it back. And two, you want to ask them if they will still be charging you their monthly fee while the property is vacant, because some do and some don't. And you just want to make sure that you're aware of those things.
Right. That would not be a property management company that I would work with that would charge me their 10% per month while the house is vacant.
It's not typical, but at the same time, you realize that they're doing work on your house.
Right. We're paying them labor to fix up things. Like, that, you should not be paying a property management fee while your house is vacant. Look, shop around, find another property manager if they're going to charge you while your house is vacant. Absolutely not, 100%. No investor we work with would have to go through that, and you shouldn't either.
Right. It's not common, but ask the question. It's important to ask the question.
Great. So that is today's episode. If you want more information about everything we were talking about, head on over to morrisinvest.com. We'll have all links up there in the show notes. And by the way, if you are ready to pick up your first rental property or expand your portfolio, we would love to work with you. That's what we do at Morris Invest, which is our company. We are a turnkey real estate provider, so we are fully done for you service. So the clients that work with us, we take care of everything, and that is rehab to rental, and we are great property management teams that we work with. Handle everything. So if you are ready and you'd like to book a call with our team and see if it's a fit, it's not a fit for everyone. Some people like to do the work themselves and manage properties themselves and rehab properties themselves. If that is you, then that is not a fit. But if you would like to work with us or even see if it's a fit, go over to our website, morrisinvest.com, and click on the book a call tab. And we love to get on the phone with you for like 30 minutes and talk and see, you know, what your goals are and what you would like to accomplish in the realm of financial freedom. Sound like a plan?
Mm-hmm.